You're listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hello and welcome to episode 131 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you, of course, by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Dockin. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin. And I see a little silhouette of a van. Van Lee. Scalamouche.
Scalamouche. Will you do the fandango? Indeed. Yes, it is me. That's also not a very little silhouette, if you want to go into that depth. It's quite a large silhouette.
In the pants?
All over, baby.
I also see a little silhouette of a Ron, because I couldn't think of anything else clever. What's up, Ron Rigney?
Hey, is that more like a sundial van?
I guess it could be. Let's go with that. Sure.
Okay. All right. Cool. What's up, guys? How are you? It's funny. I actually listened to that song the other day. I was playing that song for my daughter, and she really got into it. So,
isn't your daughter like two?
She's three, but yeah. But dude, okay. Good example of my daughter is she really likes some of the music that she likes is like even too heavy for me, and I'll flip through. Like XM, and I don't know if we can drop F-bombs on here.
Van just has to bleep it out, so I'm all for it.
I'll do
okay,
it.
So we're flipping through XM the other day, and my daughter, first of all, she says she wants to rock out. So I flipped through, and I got to find a good song, and the song she wanted me to settle on was Pantera Hostile. So
yeah.
So she's metal to the core already, so it's pretty cool. But yeah, she was digging the Queen as well.
Nice.
Yes.
My wife is 32 years old, and I had to play her Bohemian Rhapsody for the first time like last week.
No way.
She'd never seen Wayne's World?
That's no. Oh, she's one of those girls that like she's seen Coyote Ugly 30,000 times and sort of sticks in that Kamram sort of genre. She's she's probably not a huge Queen fan. So
okay.
I mean, I don't even care if you're a Queen fan. You had to have heard that song. Like that's a like, groundbreaking song.
Yeah, I guarantee she's heard it somewhere.
Well, like I hate your wife.
Stadiums. Yeah, so do I. So. Just kidding. Sometimes she listens. Just a joke. let's see. On today's show, folks, we talk about how much we hate our spouses. No, we talk about some news, some breaking news, as a matter of fact, straight into the Nasty Cast. We'll get to that in a hot second. We're going to play Legit or Quit again now that the primary trade deadline is over. We have less to talk about on that front. And then, of course, we're going to talk about bullpens in our closer report to round out the show. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at NastyCastBGFS. You can also follow is it fair to call it a sister podcast? Does that work?
Let's
Since
go
it's
with
like
that.
Us that do it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that sounds all right.
It's the, of course, Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast, which you can listen to on iTunes, Google Play, I assume Stitcher, on Fantrax itself, as a matter of fact. And you can now follow the Twitter account that we have associated with that at Fantrax Dynasty. And, of course, Van is at Manly Van Lee, and Ron is at The Real Maday on Twitter, M-A-D-A-Y. And so, yeah, go listen to Fantrax Dynasty Baseball. We just recorded it. It's brilliant, if I do say so myself, everything except what I said. Also, go to BigGuyFantasySports.com for our baseball and football articles, the football aspect being Ron. What have you been rolling out on there recently, Ron, for football?
Yeah, so I've been doing I'm trying to get you ready for your bye weeks and when you're getting ready for your draft. And so far I've rolled out some quarterbacks that you can look at later on, you know, later on in the rounds. And plus, too, you know, not just in your draft, but if you kind of tuck that information away a little bit. Of course, I had Ryan Tannehill for a week, so that kind of I kind of got the kibosh on that. And I rolled out the running backs as well, and I should have the wide receivers done this weekend and then the tight ends after that. But I'm just trying to help you out with bye weeks as far as some maybe under the radar guys and some guys in your drafts that may not cost you as much as some of your normal backups might. So
In any scenario, would you roster Jay Cutler?
Me personally, no, because Jay Cutler is one of those guys that I've gotten burned by so many times that, you know, the matchup looks good. The numbers look good for that week. He's going against a bad defense and he craps the bet on you. So me personally, I would not. But I mean, depending upon what he does leading into that season, I can't remember what week it was I called for Ryan Tannehill. The one thing I do like about Jay Cutler is I do like the weapons around him in Miami. I do like the fact he played for Adam Gase and had a nice season. So, but still, I call him one of those. He's one of those Charlie Brown guys for me that, you know, Lucy holds the football and she says she's not going to move it. She's not going to move it. And so he gets suckered in every time to kicking it. I've gotten suckered into Jay Cutler more times than not, and it's ended badly for me. So me personally, no thank you. But the matchup that week, I think Cutler could step in and be decent that week. But am I going to do it? I don't think so.
Yeah, I think the correct answer is no on that. So you can also get more brilliant fantasy football analysis by purchasing Bob Logan's 2017 Fantasy Football Consistency Guide. Be sure to use coupon code NASTYCAST to get $1 off of that bad boy. It's already pretty cheap to begin with. Was it like $7?
Yeah.
$8, something like that. Yep. And of course, please.
In your couch cushions or your change holder, your cup holder in your car. So
yeah, just shake out your kids. They've got that in their that loose change in their pockets.
Did you say shank out your kids like like with a knife? Don't promote murdering your children for
you got to do
money.
What you got to do to get that guide. So if it comes to that, I'm like, hey.
If you've got to sell your children's blood on the black market, you've got to win your football league this year. Also, please rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Do not shank your children. We will give you some free Dots pretzels if you screenshot it. And also, we will love you forever. Time is running out, by the way, because that deal is an exploding one that ends at the end of the season because I'm not shipping those bastards all over the country anymore. It's expensive. So we got a little bit of banter to talk about before we get to the news, because I got to meet the Twins GM, Thad Levine, this past week, boys. Be jealous.
Very jealous indeed. You got to meet not only the Twins GM, but you got to meet a man whose actual name is Thad.
Yeah, and he was actually cool. Like, he wasn't a super dork. Well, maybe he was kind of dorky, but he was also cool at the same time. You know, one of those guys.
Did you, like, rub the small of his back or you know, touch him inappropriately?
No. I tried. They kicked me out. Mm. But, yeah, no.
As long as you didn't rub the small of his front, maybe his back. So.
So many comments I'm going to leave alone right there. but yeah, no, it was cool. It was a baseball prospectus event at Target Field. It was put on by Aaron Gleeman, who is the editor in chief of Baseball Prospectus. And then it was him and John Bonas, who is also a part of Twins Daily. And they're on KFAN all the time talking about the Twins. And then Parker Hageman, who also writes about the Twins. And then Nick Nelson, I think they're all part of Twins Daily. So they had sort of a panel after the interview with Thad Levine. But yeah, it was Thad and Aaron. Like, they started off, Thad was only going to be there for an hour. He ended up staying for like an hour and 15, which is just awesome. And so it started off with just Aaron Gleeman basically interviewing him to sort of get the juices flowing a little bit. And that took way too freaking long because they only left like 20 minutes for questions from the crowd. So I didn't even get to answer my stupid question. Or ask a stupid question.
Which, by the way, was probably along the lines of those like old Chris Farley skits where he would interview celebrities where he'd go, do you remember when on that movie you were there? Like, that's what that would have been like.
Do you remember when you guys called up Miguel Sano? Like, that was really great.
That was pretty cool.
That was great.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was. But no, it was awesome. Like, we were down and we were deep in the colon of Target Field. We were in it was all in the root, like their press conference room, I guess, which is, they said it was like the war room for their draft. They did their entire draft from there too. And so like just being down there was pretty cool. And of course being only a few feet away from Thad Levine, but you guys can actually listen, or anybody else out there listening. If you go to the Gleeman and the Geek podcast, they recorded the audio, which kind of sucks because I wanted it to be like an exclusive thing. Like, I could come back with all this like insider information and gloat about it on my podcast and send it out to the masses. But no, like, the entire thing you can listen to on Gleeman and the Geek, their feed. They recorded it's not the best sound quality, but you know, you can get the gist of it. He was actually super, super funny. It was awesome. And he was a total non-D-bag too. Like, I kind of expected a lot of sort of puff, puff, bullshit kind of thing, you know, from GM speak. And it wasn't that at all. He was super candid and like, and just joked around and stuff. It was awesome because he even got asked directly about, you know, what other sort of trade plans did you have in mind? Was it just going to be Jaime Garcia? And all along, did you know, we were sort of sitting on the fence. And he can't give away any names, but he was just like, no. Which was like, obviously just got everybody's brain percolating, like, what were they going to do? It just didn't happen and all that. So it was really, really cool. I would recommend going out and listening to it. I actually did take something away from his. It was crazy. Like, you would just wind him up and he would talk for, like, he gave really, really long detailed answers. He would talk for like 5 minutes after each single question, which is probably why I didn't get to ask anything. But one interesting thing, as they were talking about sort of the trade deadline, because that just happened, that I think I'm going to sort of put towards my personal fantasy strategy as far as trading and stuff, is he'll contact all of the other 29 teams, he said, and well in advance of the deadline, and just ask them, are you planning on buying? Are you planning on selling? What are you looking to acquire? What are you looking to sell, if that's the case? And just sort of you're jotting that down. And so if you need a certain thing, you can kind of just go to this team and say, hey, are you, you know, still in this position? And so on and so forth. And that requires a certain level of dedication in a league, you know, as I think about it, because there are a lot of leagues where guys just don't really give a crap after like May, you know. So you actually have to have people getting back to you. But I thought it was really interesting that, you know, just thinking about doing it that much, that in depth, actually checking in with all the teams and trying to think of all these chess pieces well in advance of what you could possibly do to better your team at the deadline. By the way, for the Dynasty, I thought we had a really fun, that's a whole nother tangent, but we had like 5 trades on the last day. It was pretty great.
It was crazy, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so that was pretty cool. And I would recommend listening to that, because it was actually really informative. And there is some other stuff I was going to bring up too, but I feel like I've been rambling forever. So we shall move on to some more fun stuff. I don't know. What do you guys think about all this nickname nonsense that's going around this past weekend? Do you think it's cool or lame?
I don't know. I think it's a little on the lame side. I mean, some of the names are kind of cool, but some of them, I think that the stories behind them are a little too deep for the fans. I don't really understand some of them. I do like the fact that Blake Treinen is going to be wearing Balake on the back. That's kind of cool.
How does he spell that?
I think it's Balkay. If you don't know, it's in reference to the Key and Peele substitute teacher skit. If you've never seen that, listeners, go drop what you're doing right now and go check it out. Also, check out the East-West Shrine Game Key and Peele videos as well. They're pretty stellar also. But I don't know. I mean, I guess it's kind of a cool idea, but overall, I don't know. What was that?
It kind of feels like this could be like the XFL. Do you guys remember that? Where they were allowed to put whatever they want on their jerseys, and the one guy's name was He Hate Me.
I don't know. Smart.
It's neat, but this to me, it feels like a stressed thing that the old people are trying to do to get the cool kids to pay attention. Like, this will get young viewership in. Let's let them put words on their jersey for 2 days. Like, that's what this feels like to me.
I do agree with that. You put it like that, but at the same time, I kind of like it, because maybe it does like make some Sports Center clips, you know, if they have some of the more interesting ones, and then maybe a casual fan kind of is endeared towards a specific player because they remember their nickname on their shirt from that one weekend, and they start to like it and maybe pay a little bit more attention. It's a stretch, but I don't know. I think it's cool that they're going to have names on the back of the Yankees uniforms for the first time ever, even if they're stupid.
That's a big deal. That's a really big deal, I think.
I do think some of the jerseys that they're wearing are really cool, though, the designs that they're wearing. I don't know if you guys have paid much attention to those, but some of those turned out really cool. And some of them are really terrible, but like the White Sox one, I'm kind of scrolling through these now. The White Sox one's kind of cool. I like the Mariners one, just with the hideousness of it. It's kind of interesting with the color scheme, you know. It's pretty cool.
So I need to look more at that, because I've basically, whatever has come through my Twitter feed in 10-minute increments is all that I've seen as far as the names. I haven't actually paid too much attention to the color scheme and stuff, which really is what I love.
Yeah, I didn't realize until a little bit ago that they were actually wearing different jerseys also. I thought it was just going to be the traditional jerseys with the names on the back, but no, some of these designs are kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. But here's the other thing about it too, is they're calling it Players Weekend. So it also feels like an employer is like, yeah, we're going to take away. You can only get 1 week vacations this year. But guess what? You can wear jeans on a Thursday. That's kind of what it feels like. They're like, this is for the players. Have fun.
It's some of the so I don't know. I do like it when they switch things up like that. I'm one of those guys that likes the color rush in NFL, whereas most people are just bitching about it all the time. I like switching it up like that, so maybe that just speaks to me. But some of the interesting names that I've seen so far, Kyle Seager is Cody's brother.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. And then randomly, like the swingman from the Rays, Chiwei Hu. Did you see that one, Ron?
I did not.
It's just going to be WHO with a question mark, like who?
Who's on first? Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So well, that's pretty good.
Do you have, because I'm trying to find it here, and I don't know where I lost it in my notes, Chris Archer's. Do you have that anywhere? I didn't know if you had the Rays up, but his is, it's so random, but it's one of my favorite ones just because of the randomness of it. I'm trying to find it.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it. I will say that also the people who don't put a nickname on their jerseys are super duper lame. And Joe Mauer, of course, is one of them. Not only did he not go with sideburns, he didn't go with 4-6-3, which is what everybody calls him. So, or 6-4-3.
So he is, but he's not putting any nickname on there.
It's just Mauer.
It is.
He must be in that article, Van, that you referenced earlier about the guys that do not like fun.
Right. That, like yeah. Brian McCann, there's no way that guy has. Even his nickname of, you know, baseball police, he wouldn't put that on there. He's probably sitting in the corner with his arms crossed and his first place Astros team, like, this is bad for baseball, you know, throwing his old man fit. That's my Brian McCann voice, by the way, apparently.
It's probably accurate.
Archer's name is Flaco Fuerte. Flaco Fuerte.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I got to look up the story behind that, but.
Huh. Isn't he American?
Yeah, I was going to say, like I said, some of these, the stories behind them have to be real, you know, really out there and detailed.
Anyway, all right. Well, enough of the silly nickname talk.
Let's talk about one more. I'm sorry. I just found one. One more. Do you know what Nick Castellanos' nickname is?
What's that?
Nick. That's all he's putting on his jersey. Just Nick. Yeah, that's it.
That son of a bitch. You know what? He switched his name to Nicholas in the preseason just so he could do that.
I'm trading him. I'm trading him just for that.
I'm done. You know, yeah.
I'm done with yeah, that name crap.
That's grounds for fantasy divorce.
It is. Good sport.
All right. Speaking of divorce, Jay Bruce has divorced himself from the Mets. He is going to the Cleveland Indians. That news just broke as we're recording this, with Michael Brantley hitting the DL with an ankle injury. Looks like Cleveland decided to send a couple staples over to New York. We're not sure of the return yet, but Jay Bruce is going to the Tribe, guys. So what do you think about his value? Up, down, or the same?
Same. Well, maybe slightly up, but mostly the same. I mean, he has enough kind of power that it's going to play in any stadium. It's going to be in a better lineup, obviously, but I also think he's going to get the same amount of playing time. So I don't know. It's a lateral move for me as far as value, but it's good for him because he's going to get to play on a team that's likely going to the playoffs, and it'll be a fun little race to be in.
Yeah, it'd be nice change of scenery. And I referenced that with Lucas Duda, you know, when we talked about him, I think it was last week. I think that change from going from a bottom feeding team that's really not going anywhere to a team that is in it, I think that's got to be exciting for a player. And I think that maybe gives him a little bit of an uptick in value for me. But like Van referenced, I think the biggest thing for me is he's got power that translates pretty much anywhere, but he's also hitting in a much better lineup, you know, with E5 and with Lindor. And so I think that'll definitely help his value. So I could see a little bit of a tick upward in Jay Bruce's value. I only have him in one place, so I hopefully it'll help me out there.
Yeah, it looks like, I mean, they've got some names out there too, so he might even potentially get platooned. So I would say in that regard, it might be valued down. It sort of remains to be seen exactly how they handle him, especially when Brantley gets back. He's just got an ankle sprain, so I don't know exactly how long he's going to be out as of right now. They just placed him on the DL, I think, today. So, I mean, a sprain doesn't sound too bad, so I would assume, you know, maybe 2 weeks, something like that. So maybe when he comes back, Jay Bruce gets squeezed for a little bit of playing time. But I guess we'll have to wait and see how that shakes out. I'm a little bit nervous as a Bruce fan that he's going to be sitting against lefties, but we shall see. Not like he's too great against lefties anyway, so maybe it's sort of addition by subtraction, one of those type of things. But we shall see. Yonder Alonso in our other post-trade deadline waiver trade was sent to Seattle for Boog Powell. Boog Powell, talking about him once again. I haven't said his name enough tonight. We talked about him on Fantrax Dynasty Baseball. Let's not talk about Boog Powell. Let's talk about Yonder Alonso. Ron, what do you think? Is value up, down, or the same going to Seattle?
I don't know. It's hard for me to trust Yonder Alonso just because he's having such an abnormal season as far as, especially from a power standpoint, than he's been used to before. So, I mean, to me, it kind of, the value is kind of the same because I'm not a big believer in what he's doing this year anyway. So I think it's a nice deal for Seattle. I don't think that they really, when you, I know we said we weren't going to talk about Boog Powell, but when you look at what he does, it's I'm not, kind of a head scratcher for Oakland. I don't know if they just didn't think they could get much more for Yonder Alonso, which it'd be interesting to see if they had gotten any other offers for him. But to me, he's kind of the same guy. I don't know as far as, is it going to be a platoon with Danny Valencia there, or is it going to affect his playing time that much? That's something that remains to be seen. But overall, I'm not a big Alonso guy anyway, so it really, to me, is about the same.
You know, they did come out and say that Valencia will be platooning with him, so that's going to be a big factor in it. As far as his value goes, I think it's about the same. Park factors are close to similar. I mean, Oakland sucks to hit in, but Seattle's not a great place to hit in either. One thing to point out about Alonso is his home run totals. So by month, in March, April, he hit 4. In May, he, of course, hit 10. June, he hit 3. July, he hit 5. And he hasn't hit any in August. So, I mean, where he certainly has more power than he used to with the, you know, 6 per season. But he's not the 10 homer a month guy. I think he might hit 5 for the rest of the way. So he's kind of come back down to earth in that regard. The batting average is fine. Virtually everything else is fine. As a platoon guy, that'll make sure he doesn't have to face any lefties. So kind of like you said, Nate, about the guy we were just talking about, Bruce, there's maybe some addition via subtraction in that regard. I wasn't that enamored with him and didn't want anything to do with him in the first place, so I'm still going to be avoiding. But if you own him, this isn't a death knell by any regards, and in fact, might even help him a little bit.
I want to circle back real quick to Jay Bruce. I actually was just looking up his splits as you guys were talking about Alonso, and he has a 104 WRC plus against lefties this year. So it's not like he's exactly been stinking up the joint. So maybe they don't platoon him. We shall see. It's kind of a crowded outfield there once everybody's healthy. So I kind of hope that they, you know, just kind of leave him alone. Yonder, well, yeah, I had him on a couple teams. He's sort of one of these flyball revolution guys that one of the few ones that I actually was able to nab, as opposed to like the Lomos and the Justin Smokes. I didn't get any of those guys. I got Yonder Alonso, and that's the reason that I'm sinking like a stone in all the standings in all my leagues and over the last couple of weeks, is because the power has just completely fallen off. Yeah, 1228 OPS in May, and June 786, July 789, 607 so far in a brief stint of August. But ugh, good Lord. So hopefully he gets back to hitting some taters. I wish that he would just find a hitter-friendly ballpark for once, but that is not the case. So I guess we just have to hope for the best with Ori Yonder. Let's see. Let's move to Legit or Quit. I forgot to put a break in here somewhere. Let's just get part of the way through Legit or Quit, and I'll break when we need to pee. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Or when we need another string of cheese or something like that, perhaps.
That's always, though, so we'd be breaking nonstop.
That's true. We can't handle that. Let's talk about Alex Bregman, who we can't handle his heat lately. Since July 1st, he's hitting 333, 423, 667, boys. So, Van, let's start with you. Neither one of us were on the Bregman train, but since July 1st, he's been mashing. Have you changed your tune on Alex Bregman?
Bregmania. It's here, brother. yeah, well, okay. It's a hard thing to say that we weren't on the Bregman train. Here's the problem I had with it. He was being overvalued so much.
He was,
in the preseason. And in fact, I just wrote about him in my Holder Fold column from last week. And he was just being overdrafted way, way, way too much. I didn't understand why people were taking him, you know, with the 50th overall pick in baseball. It was absurd. And guess what? The people who did that really struggled because he sucked early on. He's really picked it up now, and his overall season numbers look pretty good. He's hitting 273, 356, 478. He's got 13 homers, 12 steals. Bregman is exactly what I thought he was going to be, which is a maybe 20-20 guy who hits for a decent average and, you know, isn't going to kill you anywhere in the board. He's walking more than I ever would have guessed. So maybe he's even taken another stride forward, but I don't know. It's something to watch. He's young, so obviously there's potential to go up, but there's also potential to go down. So I believe in his season numbers. What I just mentioned, I think is legit, and I think he can do that. And I think this year he's probably going to finish, I don't know, maybe with an 18-15 season or 18-18 season, which is really good. So there's definitely value to be had here. And I think if you're in a dynasty league, he's already played well enough that you're going to have to overpay to get him. We've already missed the window where you could get him for a cheaper cost, yeah. But he's still going to be a really good player. So I like him. I'm just, again, still think it's crazy to be valuing him as, you know, a second rounder or something absurd like that. Next year, I'll kind of have to see how the numbers shake out, but we'll, in other words, we'll see in that regard, but I do like him.
Yeah, same thing for me. He's legit if you put it in perspective as to what kind of player he's going to be, and I'm the same way. I like him, but I didn't like him to the point where I hyped him up as much as some other people did. Van, you kind of alluded to what he might do as far as projections, and I was looking at ESPN's projection of him, and they have him on pace for 19 homers, 62 RBIs, and 17 steals, and hitting in the 270 range. So if you put that in perspective as to what you're getting from him, I mean, that's a potential 2020 season with 60 RBIs. That's not bad. I don't think it's anywhere near what it doesn't match up to what the ADP was. I don't have the ADP in front of me, but I know it's higher than I was willing to pay because I don't think I have Alex Bregman in one place, and the only reason I got him there was because I was comfortable with the value I was getting on him, and he's been a guy that I would say more often than not has been a bench player on that team. I think it's a 10-team league, so it's not as shallow, or it's a little bit more shallow than some formats. But overall, I like him. I think he will be a really nice player. He plays in a great offense, and that offense is going to be intact for a while with all the young players they have coming up. So I like Bregman, but I didn't get on the preseason hype train like everybody else did. So if you put in perspective what you're getting from him, he's definitely a legit player for me.
Well, part of what I didn't like about his value coming into the season was the fact that he just wasn't going to hit at the top of the lineup or in the middle of it. He was going to hit 6, 7, 8 somewhere down there because the Houston Astros lineup is just so stacked. And so that's simply going to limit your plate appearances, and you're only going to get so many opportunities at rents and RBI. So that led to a big part of his value being, being overdrafted, however you want to put it. But the other day, actually, I recommended him on Fantastics. Because it was a very favorable situation. He's been mashing against lefties this year, and he was going up against Derek Holland. And he actually batted leadoff against Derek Holland, and he smoked him for, he had a triple and three RBI and tried to steal a base, got caught. But so especially against lefties this year, what is he hitting? 418 weighted on base against lefties so far. Just crushing them despite his early season struggles. So I think this is, if you look at his splits between before and after July 1st, from the start of the season to July 1st, he hit 249, 329, 402, 9.5% walk rate, 16.9% K rate, 30% hard contact. And since then, he's got a 13% walk rate, 9.8% K rate. So walking more than striking out. He's got 28 runs in 30 games, 5 bombs, 14 doubles, 3 triples, and is 6-for-7 stolen bases. So he's swiping bases at pretty good pace too, and he's up to hard contact to 34%. So that's up 4%. So I think that this is some just standard progression from a good young player who has always been tabbed as a great hitter. And, you know, he might make our preseason hate look bad if he continues this pace for the rest of the year. And like you said, Van, I think in Dynasty and Keeper Leagues, your chance to buy low was probably, you know, 2 months ago or whatever when he was just hitting like crap. So your window has closed now. Now you're going to have to overpay, like you said. So I do like Bregman the rest of the way. I would definitely put a legit label on him. That said, I don't think he's going to be, you know, the next Nolan Arenado or anything like that. I still think that he's nice power, nice speed, good batting average. Not really elite in any one category.
Sure. I'm going to take a quick opportunity here to kind of go over basically my whole concept from my article last week, which is if you overvalue a guy, and this is very, very simple. Maybe it's just because I do this a lot more than the average fan that this is common knowledge to me. So I'll just kind of explain it. If you draft a guy 50th overall, and he has a really good season and he performs as the 46th best player, you're getting four surplus picks of value. But if you draft that player 60th overall, you're getting 24 surplus picks of value. So the problem I had with this preseason was that people were valuing him so high is that you're negating any extra value. So if you took him in the third round or whatever it may be, even if he performs as a third round player, you're not gaining any surplus. And that's how you win leagues. The guys who win you leagues are the guys you take in the eighth or ninth round who perform as a second or third rounder. So that's why, and Ron, you kind of mentioned too, it's just we weren't comfortable taking him that high. It's for that reason. It's not that we didn't necessarily believe that he could do what he could do. It's just that you're also eliminating any surplus value and thus negating the actual reason to take him at X position.
Well, to kind of piggyback on that too, and I've been talking about this a lot with football drafts coming up, and it's the same thing in baseball. And I mentioned it before, I only got him in one league just because I was comfortable with the value that I got him at. But when you look at these guys like Alex Bregman and you look at maybe the ADP before you start doing your drafts, you can't say, oh, I'm not going to draft him anywhere just because I don't like where he's going. I mean, because there could be somewhere he could fall to you. Like a guy that is a good example of that in football leagues is, and there's very few guys that I have in any sport that I just for 100% will not draft. And it's not so much for ADP. It's more just because, kind of like I alluded to with Jay Cutler, I get burned with these guys. But, you know, there's guys that you have to kind of put in perspective where you get them. And you can't just say, like football, for example, Cam Newton. I'm not going to take Cam Newton at all this year because I just don't personally like him. But if he gets to a point where you're in the later rounds of your draft and you get him at a good value, kind of like you said, you get that surplus value, you got to jump on those guys. You know, and Alex Bregman was that guy for me in one league because I was comfortable with where I was going to get him and I felt like it was value. But, you know, you got guys you'll overpay for, but you always have to, you know, I always go into drafts saying I have a very short list of guys that I will not touch for various reasons. Other guys that I may not be a big fan of, they get to a point where they become such a value, you can't ignore them being on the draft board anymore. And that was kind of where I got with Alex Bregman in that league. I kind of was like, why is he still on the board still? And then it got to a point where I took the plunge and took him. And for where I got him at, I'd have to look and see what round. I'm happy with what I'm getting for him as kind of being my utility spot. So you have to go in with an open mind on all these guys pretty much and say, okay, he starts becoming a huge value at round X. And then beyond that, anything, if player Z is still out there, I'm going to go grab him. And for me, Bregman was that guy.
Alrighty. Well, what about Hyunjin Ryu, Ron? He's coming off a 7 shutout inning performance against the Mets where he gave up only one hit with no walks and 8 Ks. Does he appear to be a good value to you for the rest of the season?
I think so because, right now he's ranked as the 60th starter. And when you look at what he's done lately, overall, the overall body of work, I don't like the 1.28 whip. The ERA I can live with. But when you look at his last 10 starts, he's been sharp lately, and he's got that solid offense behind him. I mean, we know that the Dodgers are just running away with the division. They're running away with baseball, period. Nobody's even close to him. He's not allowed more than 2 earned runs in a start since June 11th, and we're in well into August, boys. So I think he's definitely legit. If he's a guy that's out there, I think he's definitely worth scooping up. The only thing I don't like about him is the previous 5 starts before that June 11th start. He only made it 5 2/3 at the most. So he had a little bit of a hiccup there as far as making it deep into games. But overall, like I said, it'll be interesting to see if he continues to pitch well for this season, what they're going to do with the rotation when Kershaw comes back. Because you've got Kenta Maeda sitting there. I think he kind of becomes the odd man out because they'd already kind of experimented with him in the bullpen. But as of right now, I think Ryu is a guy that if you need it, he's a really solid streaming option. I don't have his ownership percentage in front of me. But if you can get him as kind of a back-end starter and kind of mix and match and play him in nice matchups, I think he's definitely a legit guy to look at kind of down the stretch here.
I certainly agree with that. And if you look at his game log, basically his poor ERA starts with an exception here or there are he was at Chicago against the Cubs. He had a 7.71 ERA. That was early in the season. He was at Washington, came into town. He had a 5+ ERA. He had another one in Coors where he had an 11.25 ERA. So his bad starts have been against teams that you probably weren't wanting to start him against anyway. Now, the thing about him, too, is that he feels like he's old. He feels like all of those, well, not all, but most of the Japanese pitchers that have been around forever. And but he's only 30. Now he needs. Yeah,
I thought the same thing. It's funny you say that. I had to look up his age too, and I couldn't believe that he was only 30.
Yeah, it's crazy.
When you've pitched so sporadically for the last couple of years, years just fly by when he's not on your radar. So it's hard to keep track.
It's very true. Yeah, in as far as innings pitched in 2013, he threw 192. In 2014, 152. And then since then, he's had, I think he had the Tommy John surgery, but he's had surgeries and injuries and so forth. He's up to 91 innings this year. I doubt he's a take the ball every fifth day guy and get you a bunch of innings the rest of the way. But he's a spot starter who's going to provide some really good value. FIP doesn't like him, says he's about almost a full run above his ERA, but XFIP does. So that tells me that home run wise, he's keeping the ball in the park at least at a decent rate. Or at least a stable rate anyway. So this is definitely a guy that, you know, to be honest, I'm in fourth place in a dynasty league, maybe a handful of points out. It's a 16 teamer. This is a guy that I'll probably try and get, maybe give up a mid-tier prospect for just to see if I can, you know, maybe get some quality starts out of him, maybe get some strikeouts, just to boost my team a little bit. So he's definitely a guy that I would target, though I wouldn't really give up a whole lot to get a hold of.
I can't imagine anybody's holding him too tightly. It seems like a guy who can pretty much limp off the field at a moment's notice. He's pretty much the definition of injury prone. I'm not huge on him. There's like no real gains in velocity or anything like that. And it's weird because he's always been susceptible to left-handed hitters, but he's been especially horrible against them this year. He's allowed a 4.12 WOBA against lefties. And that is despite increasing the use of his changeup. And adding a cutter. And the changeup, he's got a 21% whiff rate on the changeup. And he's using it 7% more than the last couple of years. And like I said, he started to work in a cutter 15% of the time. And that pitch alone has induced 63% grounders. And so that's led to a career high 47% ground ball rate. So that's been part of his success right there. He's still got a freaking 19% home run per fly ball rate. So that's why XFIP likes him so much. But if you look at his, you know, his track record, he's always given up a lot of home runs. So I'm not necessarily sure that's something that's going to change. I think I might agree with his FIP a little bit more on that one since he's been stranding 80% of guys. So, you know, I still think that he's like a high 3, low 4 ERA type of pitcher, but he's usable everywhere to me now that he's finally healthy. But like I said, at the drop of a hat, you could be losing him. So if you're trying to acquire him via trade, if your deadline hasn't passed yet, I would probably look for somebody else because this guy is just really volatile. But if I have him, I'm going to keep trotting him out until he falls off. But let's move on to another guy who has had his own flurry of injury concerns over the years, and that's Dylan Bundy, who is finally putting together a pretty solid season. Crap, I just lost his numbers too because I was looking up Hyunjin Ryu. Let's see, over his last couple starts, there it is. He's got 15 innings, and he's had 15 strikeouts with just one walk and only two earned runs. And that is after a horrendous July that had him with an ERA over 8, over like 20.1 innings, something like that, where it's just ugly. So has he turned the corner, Van? Are you interested again in Dylan Bundy?
This year, no, I'm really not. I don't want anything to do with him. Now, one thing I do want to point out, do you guys realize he threw 110 innings last year? That number doesn't seem right to me, but it is. Per FanGraphs, he threw 109 and two-thirds innings in 2016. Now, I knew he pitched a little bit, but I didn't think it was that high. This year, he's up to 134 and a third. They're going to keep pitching him because they're desperate for pitching help. He's had a long history of injuries. He was a top prospect, so we know he has stuff. It just hasn't quite translated this year. So for the rest of this season, I really don't want anything to do with him. I think the 4.15 ERA that he's carrying is probably a little better than what he's going to have the rest of the season. But next year, I'm probably going to be, I won't say all in, but I'm going to be targeting him because I think the price will be okay because the K per nine rate's down. He's at 7.17, though I do think that's better than it. His K per nine rate should be higher than that is what I'll say because he does have good stuff. Like you said, he just struck out 15 batters in 15 innings. So this year, I'm going to avoid him just because I think he's still building up stamina and strength. But next year, he's going to be a guy that I'm taking a nice long look at.
Yeah, same here. And next year, I think it's going to be kind of similar to the investment that was this year. I might take a late round flyer on him. And if he pans out, great. If not, I'll dump him for somebody else on waivers pretty soon. So, which is kind of what you were able to do with him this year. He's been right around average, if I had to kind of categorize what he's doing. And the season hasn't been bad. I do like the fact he has made 22 starts because the health has been an issue. We mentioned with Hyunjin Ryu the fact that we didn't realize that he was only 30. Dylan Bundy's another guy that it seems like he has been a top prospect and been around forever, and he's only 24. So he's still got a lot of baseball ahead of him, and he could figure it out in the next 2 year or two and still put together a nice 10 years as a top-level starter. So the potential's still there. I don't like the K-to-walk ratio of 107 Ks to 40 walks. I'd like to see that. The K is a little higher and the walk's a little bit lower. But overall, he's making strides, albeit small ones. But I'm not interested in this year. But like I said before, if I can get him cheap in 2018 drafts and get him at the back end of my rotation, and then if he doesn't pan out, you know, find something else out there, I'm good with that. I'm glad that I was able, the two dynasties I had him in, I was able to trade him before he got up and was able, you know, get something decent in return before he got to the majors and has pitched average. So overall, a guy I might look at late rounds next year, but this year I'm not really interested in.
You know who he reminds me of in terms of like batted ball profile, not so much in stuff, but just being an extreme fly ball pitcher, is Marco Estrada, who is, you know, like you said, sort of an average pitcher, but he's a guy who I think can consistently beat his FIP just because he's like, if you look at his 263 BABIP, okay, FIP hates him. He's got a 470 FIP. He's got a 415 ERA. That's because he's just getting a ton of fly balls. And obviously, if they leave the yard, that's not a ball in play. So that doesn't count against you anyway. So that kind of screws up the calculation. But he's got a really nice infield fly ball rate as well, 13.7%. And that's something that he's consistently done. And so I think that he could be a guy who is consistently, like I said, beating his FIP. And that profile is a lot better in pitcher's parks, in big parks, out in Oakland, out in Seattle, out in LA where the Angels play. We were talking when I was on with Al Melchior, we sort of talked about these fly ball pitchers. You know, we talked about Parker Bridwell and Dylan Bundy, but Bundy is in the AL East in a bunch of hitters parks, and so that really limits my interest in him just because you got so many hitters parks and the ball just flies out so much easier that it really, between that and the injury history, I really, even next year, I don't know, unless he's super super cheap and it's just like a no-brainer to take him. I just am really not that interested because he doesn't strike out a ton of guys either. So, hopefully you were like Ron and sold him when his value was really high, because I just I'm quitting him for the rest of the season. This is it's a nice change of pace. It's a nice couple games, but I would definitely say that that last start. Let's see. That was in Oakland, right? That last one. Oh no, that was that. So I think the next start actually is at Oakland. So like in that scenario, I'm going to start him. I'm going to throw him out there for sure. That seems to be where his skill set lines up well. Outside of that, I think I'm going to probably leave him on my bench in deeper leagues and just avoid him in shallow leagues. But we can move on to another pitcher. We've got a few more pitchers to round out legit or quit. Actually, you know what? Let's take a break right here. We'll leave you on the edge of your seats. Who are we going to talk about next? It might be Danny Salazar. It might be Mark Trumbo, but I already said it's a pitcher, so it's not Mark Trumbo. It's going to be Danny Salazar. We're going to take a break and talk about Danny Salazar when we come back.
Nasty. Nasty.
You're listening to the BGFS Network, where we keep fantasy real.
All right, we are back on the Nastiest of Casts, and we're going to talk about Mark Trumbo. No, just kidding. Danny Salazar. Since his return from the DL, Danny Salazar has been a new pitcher, boys. He's got a 1.35 ERA and 0.65 whip over 20 innings. That is three starts. He's got 28 strikeouts and five walks. For the love of God, man. Let's see. Ron, I think we're on you, right? Danny Salazar, you like him?
I do, and I liked him when they moved him down to the bullpen. I think we all kind of said he was a nice buy low candidate, and hopefully if you were able to buy low, you are reaping the benefits of that, and you want to reap benefits of those kind of moves this time of year as well. In the three starts you alluded to, you know, he's got his strikeout totals are 8, 8, and 12, and, you know, when you look at that, that's nice numbers across the board right there. The walks are not bad. The walks, he didn't walk anybody his first time out, and then two and three, and he's went at least six innings in all those. So overall looks good. I like on the season overall, the Caper 9 is way up there. I'd love to see the walks come down, but like we said, that was kind of that stretch that ended up getting him put in the bullpen. Overall, I think, like I said, if you could get him, I'd like to see the BABIP come down a little bit. 327 is where that's sitting at, and XFIP really likes him at 3.26, down from his FIP of 3.82, where that sits right now. So that's encouraging to see that it's at that point, especially with the 4.32 ERA. But overall, you got to like what you're getting from Danny Salazar in his return back.
Let me ask this. Have you gents or you listeners ever played the video game Resident Evil 4?
Well, hell yeah.
Okay, so there's a villain in Resident Evil 4, and he's this weird little Spaniard, and his name
Salazar.
Is Salazar. And so every time I think of Danny Salazar, I think of Salazar from Resident Evil 4. And he talks like this. He goes, Mr. Kennedy. So that's that's Danny Salazar in my mind.
It's so over the top.
It's crazy.
Oh, man.
Oh, I love that game. The voice acting, the dialogue is all great. But anyway, Danny Salazar is awesome. I've always loved Danny Salazar. In fact, in the beginning of the season, I think I was probably a little too high on him. You guys were a lot lower. Well, you, Nate, anyway. You're looking right, of course, in this scenario, but I feel like he's righted the ship. And I think he's a really strong arm. And like Ron kind of alliterated to, if the walks come down a little more, which they haven't been too bad since he's come back, but if they come down a little more, he could be an elite level guy. This is a guy who, even when he sucks, strikes everyone out. So there's just really, really good stuff for him. And, you know, being sent to the bullpen, that DL trip, that did a lot of good for him. Obviously, because he's been amazing since he came back. And I want to point out one other thing, and that's that I actually asked the two of you for advice on a trade in a dynasty league a couple weeks ago, and it was right before Salazar came back, and someone offered me their Michael Fulmer for my Danny Salazar and Jed Jerko, and you guys were both saying, yeah, take the trade. Well, I hesitated. Yeah. I didn't take it, and boy, that sure looks good for me right now.
Never listen to our advice.
No.
What the hell do we know?
And the logic was fine. I think at that point in that league, and this is good to kind of think of for your league. So if you own Salazar and you have a team that has enough strong guys up at the top that you can take a flyer on Salazar, I would rather have him over Fulmer in that regard, because I think Fulmer's ceiling is a lot lower, but he's a really good pitcher. Now, obviously being injured, that changes everything, but Salazar is a guy that, if you have the opportunity to take a flyer on someone who can be an ace, then take it. But if you've got a team that maybe you've got a bunch of Rich Hills on your team that are going to pitch well, but they're not going to give you that many innings, then yeah.
The team hasn't got a quality start all year.
Right, exactly. Then you're probably going to want to look at more of a Fulmer type. But yeah, Salazar is a good pitcher, and I think this is the beginning of a string of a couple of years where he's really, really good.
I think I'll still take Fulmer pretty much in any case, just because of the floor. I think is super nice on him. Although I will say, like, he's on the DL now, obviously. That's so hindsight is brilliant on that one. But that's something that throughout the minor leagues, he has been nicked up from time to time. And that was actually a knock on him when the Mets traded him away. So neither player necessarily a pillar of health. But what's you, Van, you want to give us that Salazar voice again?
Mr. Kennedy.
Okay.
I looked him up. I like his outfit.
You looked up with his hat, his little.
Yeah, I did. He's got like a
tri-point hat.
He almost looks like a medieval a Columbus type explorer.
he's pretty evil. I will tell you that. Yeah.
Yeah, he looks like a nasty little dude.
Oh, and conversely, by the way, Leon Kennedy is the hero from the game, which he's been in all the Resident Evil games for the most part. So anytime I think of Mr. Kennedy, I think of Ian Kennedy of the Royals. So it's a nasty cycle.
They're just like throwing baseballs at each other. Well, if you guys want a little insight into my childhood, that stupid Salazar voice reminded me of a nightmare that I had when I was probably like 8 years old. That has stuck with me. And like, you guys know sort of the old KFC logo, right? With the dude's old ass head. And he's got that bow tie that's just black. And it's got like two things off to the side and then two sort of like strands that are lower, you know?
Yep.
Like that stupid ass bow tie.
Yeah. It's a bolo tie, just so you know. Van fact.
A bolo tie?
Bolo tie is what that's called. Yeah.
YOLO bolo. Okay, well, you learn something new every day. Well, in my nightmare, this dude had come to life, and like that little bolo tie was his arms and legs, and he was chasing me around my grandmother's house. And he had me cornered. I went and hid in a Lazy Susan, thinking that
he would find me. You could rotate, sure, yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, obviously, he comes up, he finds me, he rotates it, and he sees me, and he says, "I want Kentucky Fried Children!" And he starts tickling me, and then I woke up.
So, everything makes so much more sense now.
That's amazing.
That scared the shit out of me.
Because when you started saying that, I wondered if before you got to the Kentucky Fried Children part, I was wondering if he was chasing you in order to eat you. So that answered my question. I didn't even have to ask it.
He was going to do it. That son of a bitch.
Does Kentucky have like a special way of frying things that it's worth referring to it as that? Kentucky Fried?
You have to ask the Colonel, man. I don't know.
Let me take a moment here. I'll get on the phone and see what I can do.
Please do that. He's on Skype, I'm sure. just type in the Colonel.
See if you can bring him in. We might be able to have him on.
Yeah,
that'd
be great. Have a guest spot.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, Danny Salazar, though. He's great. there's a lot of stuff that I love over these last three starts, which is weird because he's actually started throwing his changeup less, which is his best pitch by far. So it's sort of counterintuitive that he's been better, but is whatever he fixed in the minor leagues on the DL stint, whatever you want to call it, it seems to have helped his command. He's been hitting that fastball up in the zone where it belongs, as opposed to the middle of the plate where it gets crushed, and that's made him a lot more effective. 32.4% strikeout minus walk percentage over those last three starts, and a 26% hard contact rate, very, very low. It's a major league best 173 weighted on base, and 20% pop-ups as well. So that's going to help, like you said, Ron, with that BABIP. That's going to help bring that BABIP down in a hurry because those are auto outs right there, and those are glorious. So speaking of glorious things, Trevor Williams, Van, he is also coming off a 7 shutout inning, 1-hit performance, which this is weird, by the way. We've got Salazar, Trevor Williams, and Zach Davies. Spoiler alert, he's going to be the last guy that we're talking about. All three of these guys threw 7 innings of 1-hit ball in their last start. So weird coincidence there, but Williams, 2 walks and 5 Ks against the Tigers in his last start. So what do you think about him?
I am certain that this was the first and last time anyone will ever refer to Trevor Williams as glorious. I just don't think that's going to be a common occurrence.
He's glorious.
He's a guy. I mean, he'll get you some innings. He's got a 4.17 ERA. FIP likes him a little more at 3.8. XFIP doesn't like him at 4.38. He doesn't really strike anyone out. He's got a 6.47, but he does kind of limit walks, 2.64 walk per 9. So there's some things to like, basically just that he's a beacon of consistency, I guess. He's one of those guys that in this era of home runs and climbing ERAs, he's going to be able to plug on the back half of your rotation, and you can set it and forget it. You can do the Ron Popeil thing and just not really worry about him for the most part. I don't think he's good, but I also don't think he's bad. So, I don't know. I guess I can call that legit because based on what his numbers look like to me right now, that's what I would expect him to do.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not too huge of a fan because I want to see more than the 6.47 K per 9. I want to see more than the 67% strand rate. But and two, behind him, the Pirates offense hasn't been, they've just kind of been a middle of the road. They haven't been great. They've been terrible. They've had their moments, but I just don't think you're going to get a lot out of him, and he's just kind of a guy, maybe a spot start here and there, maybe a streaming option, but he doesn't profile as a guy that I'm really going to look at a whole lot of places. To me, he kind of looks a little bit like the last guy we're going to talk about, Zach Davies. They have some similarities in their numbers here. So overall, I'll pass on that because I'd like to see more strikeouts overall.
Yeah, I don't think that's something that's going to happen too soon either. He doesn't really have a huge swing and miss pitch. 13% on the changeup is his best swing and miss pitch right there. Just an 8% swing strike rate overall. So I don't see the strikeouts trending up anytime soon. That's going to keep him from being any sort of real fantasy asset. So you're looking at a back end guy to me in 15 teamer. So I would, you know, every dog has his day. That was a really nice start from him, but no K's equals no sexy time for me. So I will pass on Trevor Williams. He gets a quit from me. So let's move on to Zach Davies then, Ron, the last 7 shutout inning hitter or pitcher of this week. Let's see. He only had two strikeouts, though, with two walks. So are you any more interested in Davies than Williams?
I mean, the strand rate's a little higher, but the K per nine is lower. The walks are about the same as Trevor Williams. So, I mean, I like him a little better just because the Brewers offense can score a little bit more. But he's only allowing 28% hard contact, so that's not bad. I'd be a little bit more apt to add him in a deeper league if I needed a guy. It's funny, his FIP and his XFIP sit at exactly the same rate right now, so it's a little high at 4.58. The ERA is a little over 4. But you're not going to find too many guys that aren't going to have ERAs at 4-plus this point in the season if you're looking for guys on waivers. So of the guys that are left out there, I mean, I wouldn't be as afraid to take a flyer on Zach Davies, but I like him a little bit more than Trevor Williams. But overall, just once again, I'd like to see some more strikeouts than the 6 per 9 innings if I could get some. But once again, you're not going to get everything. I think it seems like a lot of the waivers in my leagues, you're either going to get guys that are going to have 4.5 ERAs to 5 and get strikeouts, or you're going to have guys that are going to have a little bit lower ERA, but they're not going to strike out as much. So there's hard to find, you know, those guys that have those numbers that are going to have the lower ERA and the higher strikeouts, because obviously those are what everybody's looking for. So, yeah, I'd take a flyer on him if I needed to. I like him a little more than Trevor Williams.
Here on let me read what I actually wrote down on my rundown, which is for Trevor Williams, I wrote, ground ball guy, not exciting. If you need innings, go for it, but I'm not seeking him out. Under Zach Davies, I wrote, see above. And that's really kind of how I feel about it. They're really similar guys. If I'm going to argue between the two of them, I think I'm actually going to go Trevor Williams over Davies for a couple of reasons. Namely that Williams is in Pittsburgh with Ray Searidge, who does tend to do a little more magic with his guys. Davies is in, of course, Milwaukee, where I don't even know who their pitching coach is. Is it Maddox? Is it Greg Matt? Or not Greg, but his brother?
Mike.
Anyway, Mike. I don't know. He might be. He used to be. Anyway, the park's a little worse. I think, I don't know. They're both, neither one of them exciting. These are guys to fill spots. One thing I did kind of want to point out is if you're looking at their pitch metrics or tracking and so forth, Trevor Williams actually only threw 3 pitches last year and then has thrown 4 pitches this year, with one of them only being used less than 10% of the time. Whereas Zach Davies has thrown his 4 pitches, all of them over 10% of the time at least. So as far as repertoire goes, I actually prefer that of Davies, because I feel like if you've got a few more options to throw out of there, you're less of a bullpen guy. But I think overall, I'm still going to lean Trevor Williams. But really, I mean, you're not going to go wrong, quote unquote, with either of these guys if you understand what you're getting from either one of them.
Yeah, they are pretty similar. Neither are particularly exciting. Yeah, since the 19th, Zach Davies does have a 0.94 ERA, 0.87 WHIP. It's glorious, but 19 strikeouts over 28 and 2/3 innings is gross. Just 20% hard contact, like you said, Ron. But there's really no big change in pitch mix. Maybe a few more curveballs. So, with a strikeout minus walk percentage of just 12%. That's pretty gross, pretty unexciting. 17.6% strikeouts just does not cut it for me, especially when league average is like 20%. So, yeah, not a ton of huge interest in Zach Davies. By the way, the pitching coach is Derek Johnson out there in Milwaukee. I looked it up. I think Maddox is out in Washington last time I saw him waddling around.
Mm, yeah, and he was in Texas for a while too, so it's interesting. I did like Mike Maddox as a pitching coach, but I know the luster has kind of fallen off of him as a coach in that regard lately.
But one thing that has not fallen off of him is his mustache game.
It's amazing. It's glorious.
pretty solid.
That it is. All right, boys, on to our final segment. And, Van, we're going to start with you, since this is your favorite team in all of the land, the Angels. What the shit is going on in L.A.?
I'll tell you what's going on is that Mike Scioscia is going on. So, yeah. It's funny, if you go to like Closer Monkey or some of the various Closer Report websites, they don't even list Bedrosian as a closer anymore, and that's, or even in the mix for saves. So I think that's kind of an accurate thing. I don't know why. I still think he's a really good pitcher. He's got really good stuff, but he's just kind of fallen out of favor out there. Norris is still the closer. I think he still has quite the leg up on the rest of the competition, although he has blown a couple saves here and there. What I do want to point out, though, is that Shosha just came out and said that this kid Middleton, quote, has electric stuff. So we may be looking at him in the future. So anytime Shosha says that about a younger player, it's a big deal because he despises young players. Like, it took him forever that first year that Trout was really good to not bat him like eighth. It took a while to bat him at a decent spot in the lineup. So that's a big deal if he comes and says that about a kid. I don't necessarily think that Middleton really has great stuff, but the manager's faith in him tells me that if something were to come to it, he might be a good option to pick up to get saves. Though that's, I don't know that I would even mess with that down the road. That's just something, or this season, that's just something to keep in the back of your mind.
Yeah, I'm using my new test to see how many names are mentioned in the article about the closing situation, and there's three, so that's kind of a middle of the road number. It's not the one that we'll look at with the Twins. It has like five mentions. So I Middleton's mentioned. Blake Parker's also thrown out there, but I think overall the guy to keep at this point is Bud Norris. Yeah, it's another one of these. It's not as messy as some, but I don't think that if I can avoid it, if I can avoid this situation, I'm going to. But if I got to have one of these guys, I'm going to stick with Bud Norris. I'm still pretty shocked that he wasn't traded somewhere at the deadline for something.
As am I. And I am also going to stick with Norris, which sucks. Like, I'm benching him in the dynasty right now. He's been so, so, so bad. Like, every good thing that he's done all year has been negated, it seems like, over the last couple of weeks. Dropped like a lead balloon in standings and ERA and all those leagues. God, suck it, Bud Norris. He used to be so good. But yeah, it's weird that Bedrosian is sort of toiling away in middle relief when he was supposed to be like the closer of the future for years and years. And Middleton is enticing. He's got that upper 90s heat, big breaking ball, and so that definitely is a name to stash away for not only dynasty leagues but perhaps down the stretch too. Maybe he's one of the better handcuffs these days. I have no faith in Bud Norris being any good the rest of the season. If you can still squeeze anything out of Bud Norris's value in dynasty leagues, if you can trade him away as a closer for anything, do it now because your window is very quickly shutting. I will say that Blake Parker is another name who should at least be mentioned, but it seems like they like him in middle relief there, so probably not going to be the closer anytime soon. Let's move on to the Rangers, Ron. What do you think there as we check in with them for yet another week?
I'm still siding with my boy Leclerc.
Texas croissant.
The Texas croissant. He's still the guy that I'm with in this bullpen. I'm not too big on Keon Keela this year. Alex Claudio is kind of in the mix as well, another guy that's mentioned. But overall, I think the stuff that I'm still with is Leclerc, and he's pitched well. I think in his last 10 starts, he's only allowed one run, so he's kind of righted the ship a little bit. I know that the K to walk ratio was a little high there, kind of the midpoint of the season, but to me, he's kind of ironed it out a little bit. But he's the guy that I'm going to go with in his bullpen every time, unless somebody really separates themselves from the pack, but I'm still a Leclerc fan.
I agree. And actually, a couple of things to point out here of note. Brian Bannister came out recently and said that if Keela does return this season, it will not be as the team's closer. So he's a guy that we can just forget about. Maybe next year. I don't know. We'll see. And then also, he came out and said that he wants to start using a little more flexibility with Alex Claudio, because he's left-handed, which is a smart thing to do. So that means that likely he's going to start using Claudio as a situational guy. So in the eighth inning, if you've got two out of the three batters coming up as lefties, he's going to go in there. So that's good news for Leclerc owners such as myself, because I think that means he's going to end up getting the job. Next year, if you're thinking ahead, I think it's going to come down to Leclerc or Keela. Now, because Keela's been hurt and we really haven't seen him do a whole lot, I think Leclerc's going to have the advantage in the early going. So it's kind of a weird situation. I don't know how many players you might keep in your league. If it's a lot and you have both, keep them both. If it's a lot and you can afford just one, I would stick with Leclerc and then go from there.
I'm still going to stick with Claudio. Leclerc hasn't recorded a save since the 23rd of July. And not that there's been a whole ton of saves floating around in Texas, but It's at least on the third was the most recent one that Claudio got. So maybe Bannister's quote is telling as far as maybe they're going to shift the roles around a little bit. And so perhaps you should still hold on to Leclerc if you're handcuffing any bullpens, because this one is still very much up in the air. But I will say that if I had to hedge my bets moving forward, I'll still go with Claudio just because he's recorded the most saves recently. But let's move on.
Oh, real quick, by the way, it's worth noting that Matt Busch has not given up a run since the 19th of July. So who knows? He might even be kind of weaseling his way back into it. I don't think so, but that's another name to just keep an eye on.
Oh, what an annoying situation. Speaking of which, the Twins. Matt Belisle? Anybody? Maybe.
I mean, I guess he's by default the guy. Right now, he's converted the last two, it looks like. So I guess
if you have to
have somebody in that bullpen for saves, I mean, he hasn't allowed a run in those two save chances. So really hasn't allowed a run for a while, at least in the last 10. So, I'm looking at the names mentioned. He's only one mentioned there, but there's a couple guys in the mix. But then again, I don't know if there's been any. Nate, you might know because you follow him a little bit more. Have they alluded to the fact that he could possibly be moved in a post-deadline deal?
Oh, they'll trade him for a bag of circus peanuts for sure. Yes. He's 37 years old and he's on a one-year deal. So, yeah, they'll take whatever they can get for him, just like they did with quote-unquote all-star closer Brandon Kinsler. But, yeah, I mean, Belisle, you were mentioning how far back his scoreless streak goes. He didn't allow a run in July, and he's got over a K per inning in that span too, with much improved control. So just to throw that out there, because I did say that once Kinsler was gone on Fantastics that Belisle was probably going to be the guy based on his recent success.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, June 24th was the last time he gave up a run. He has not given up a run since then, and yet he still has a 4.43 ERA on the season. So that tells you how bad he was early. Now, does that mean he's corrected it and he's going to be that good, or does it mean that there's still a bad streak in him waiting to come out? Who knows? Here's my question. And first off, I think it's worth noting, too, that Dylan G did happen to get a save for the Twins the other day. It was of the four-inning variety.
Yeah,
so it was
one of those stupid ones.
But, yeah, I think it's Belisle. But here's my question then. So would you rather go after Matt Belisle, who you think pretty much has the job, or would you go after one of the guys in the Rangers bullpen who's probably a better pitcher, but the job might be a little more up in the air?
I'm going with saves, baby.
See, I'm on the other side of that. I'd go with the Rangers guy just for the fact that if you don't get the guy that gets saves, you're still going to get some decent stats, because I don't know if I truly believe in Matt Belisle and this scoreless streak he's got going on. So I'd probably go take a shot with the Rangers and just see what you got there.
Yeah, but if you've been weighing or staying with Leclerc, you've got zero saves in the last 2 weeks, 2-3 weeks. So since then, I mean, at least you've got a couple from Belisle. I don't know. I think that relievers especially, they're so like up and down. Like you said, Van, with all the blow-up starts that he had earlier in the season, he was horrible. These guys get out of whack so frequently, and then all it takes is one tweak and they're back and they're dominant. And I'm not going to say that
Belisle. You're here first, folks. Belisle is dominant, said by Nate Dawkins.
there's no chance that he records a 13K per nine or whatever, like some of the, like, I think that's what Leclerc's K per nine is, somewhere like that. So he's not going to give you elite numbers like that, but I think at least for the short term that Belisle's actually got the job for sure. So that's my two cents. If there's no more on that, apparently there's not. The last one, Ron, that we're going to touch on, then we're going to get out of here, is the Athletics. Woohoo! Who do you have for the A's?
Once again, if you need a guy, it looks like Balakay Trainin is the guy that you want. But it looks like Santiago Casillo. And this is just kind of – I think this has been a long time coming with Santiago Casillo, that he's kind of fallen out of favor with Bob Melvin as far as being the closer, which lately he hasn't been bad, but he hasn't recorded a save since July 23rd. It seems like a lot of these guys have had some pretty long droughts as far as recording saves. So if you need to own a guy – it seems like it's a little bit more of a a deal as far as you can kind of figure out who's going to get the saves. But then again, you know, there's a few guys in there that could be up. Ryan Dahl's another guy that is come off the DL that could be mentioned. But I think overall, Blake Train is the guy. Of course, then again, he hasn't looked all that sharp in the closer role. He's had his moments. The walks have been a little high at times. So for now, I guess Blake Train, but I don't really have a lot of confidence in anybody here.
I think it's Train all the way. He's gotten the most recent save ops, and he's converted most of them. I mean, FIP and XFIP like him a little more so than his actual ERA. They're both under 4, so there's a little bit of potential here. He doesn't give up a whole lot of home runs. He walks probably too many, but not that many, and he doesn't strike out a whole lot. It's just a little bit under 9K per 9. I think he's the guy, and to be honest, I could foresee him being the guy all next year, too. So if you're in a keep everybody league or anything like that, it might be worth just hanging on to him just because I think he really will have the job. I don't think Oakland's going to be anything special next year either. And I also don't think they're going to spend money on a closer or really do much to trade for one. So he's a name to watch for next season. I don't think he's going to be your Kenley Jansen by any means, but if he winds up with 30, 35 saves, I would not be surprised.
I was just laughing to myself because you said in a league where everybody keeps everybody. And I was just thinking that would be a great name for a dynasty league. Everybody keep everybody. It's like a play on Everybody Love Everybody, I think, was from one of those Will Ferrell movies. Oh, yeah. Anyway, I think that'd be a great name for a league. Yeah, I actually, you've talked me into training a little bit. It's been a bumpy road for sure this year, and he does walk too many guys compared to a strikeout rate. If you have a walks per nine, you know, per career with 3.5, 4, then you probably want to have like a Jose Leclerc style 13K per nine, and he's not anywhere near that. So that hurts his overall value. But yeah, I think he could be the guy moving forward this year, next year. His ERA is pretty inflated, like you guys both pointed to, the 4.59 ERA, but he's just got a 27% hard contact rate this year. So his stuff is better than that. He's been hit a little bit too hard, perhaps a little bit unlucky. So what the hell, give him a shot. He's got to be better than owning Santiago Casilla, for the love of God. It makes you want to draw yourself a warm bath and slit your wrist. That's how it feels, owning Santiago Casilla. Anyway, that's all we've got for this week, guys. Anything you want to get out there before we head off into the sunset?
Baseball.
I'll say baseball as well.
Okay. I third that. Baseball! All right, folks. Until next week, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.